I'm Margot Coatsworth, and this is Ask Margot. Welcome. This is the place to get your questions answered and your sticky issues sorted. We invite you to get in touch with us with your questions, anything you would like me to address. You can do this at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz, or you can write to me under the contact tab on my website, margounlimited.com, Margot with a T. Last episode, I didn't quite finish what I wanted to say on two points. If you would indulge me, I'd like to just include those today. We were investigating why Roz's friend might be turning into an angry person, and we did cover quite a few possibilities as to why the anger might be there in the first place. We finished on the need to find out what's behind the anger and then address that thing. I think this is really important. The anger will then take care of itself. If you say to someone, stop being angry, they'll just get angrier. I know I would. That's like saying calm down to someone, it'll just get them more fired up. But if you get rid of the cause, the effect will take care of itself, like so many things. Apart from our amazing bodies, which are programmed to heal, if you cover anything up, it's still there, it's just hidden. So if you have anything more you'd like to ask me around this subject, do get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. The second thing I wanted to say was to tell you a story which was echoed by the message we finished with last episode from the universe. You may have heard this little story. I think it's a good one. Here we go. Once upon a time, there was a man who had great faith, and he was caught in a flood. He climbed to the top of his house and he called to God and waited for God to save him. A boat went by and the driver offered to rescue him. The man said, "It's okay, God is going to rescue me." The waters rose and the man drove on in his boat. A helicopter flew by and dropped him a rope, but he said, "Don't worry about me, God is going to rescue me." And the waters rose. Eventually, the water covered the top of the house and the man drowned. When he got to heaven, God said to him, "You're a bit early. I wasn't expecting you for a bit." And the man said, "But the flood, I was waiting for you to rescue me." God said, "I sent a boat and I sent a helicopter." And the man said, "But I didn't know that was you trying to help me." And God said, "Really? It was always me." Here's the message from the universe that echoes that perfectly, and this is what we finished with last episode. Don't think it's chance when you read a book and something speaks to you. Do you think I didn't send you that? Really? Everything good and encouraging, every lead you come upon, every person who ignites something in you, I have sent them all. I thought that was pretty amazing, and I didn't want to miss sharing it with you just because we ran out of time. So on that note, let's get on with the show this week. There is much chat at the moment about businesses closing, restaurants, cafes, bakeries, entire chains. It seems we are undeterred, however, and we keep starting new ones. It's in our nature, in business and in life, to bob back up. The question that's been put to me is it such a bad idea to start a business? Why wouldn't I when I have such a good idea? Interestingly, a friend of a friend is going to answer this. I will only interject a tiny bit, as I often do. He gave me permission to use some of the comments he'd made in an article that he'd written to warn others of what to look for when you're beginning a new venture. This chap's name is Eamon O'Rourke, and he's happy to put his name to this because he wants others to avoid some of the pitfalls he has encountered. The story both begins and ends a short time ago, a time we're all familiar with. And he says, "And so it was under the cover of COVID darkness that my gin baron dream ended. Undeterred and 6 months on, I am thriving in a new startup. You see," he says, "it's in our nature to try again." Then he goes on to say, "It's my turn to pay it forward. I thought it was time to share my lessons learned. And yes, there are whole books written on this topic. But bear with me, it will be cathartic for one of us." Number one of his tips about starting a new business: choose your business partners wisely. Do they bring complementary skill sets to the table? Are your values aligned? Do they have the mental and physical tenacity to succeed? He says full doctor's examinations are recommended. Well, I hope he's joking with that one. Do you share the same work ethos? Can you have a conversation with their former professional colleagues or employees? Number two, a solid shareholder agreement is an essential investment, but don't overwork it. Complexity doesn't guarantee a fair resolution if parties don't or won't play by the rules. Anticipate director changeouts and write the playbook accordingly. Number three, startup land is full of mind, body and soul, 24/7. Do you have the resilience for the endless sleepless nights? Are you ready for the impact on your family and loved ones? That's definitely something to consider. Families don't like it when you're working all the time. Number four, build an agreed decision-making framework and live by it. Embrace Sir Peter Blake's "Will it make the boat go faster?" mantra. There will be relentless temptation to indulge in shiny things that suck up capital and deliver no value. So think about that. Number five, keep a war chest and make it impossible to dip into it without agreed crisis circumstances. Rainy days do come. Going cap in hand to the bank will only compound the stress in a partnership and personally. Number six, surround yourself with people who are smarter than you. Many successful people say that. Identify the capability shortfalls in the directorship and at the very least enlist an advisory panel. Even better, a rock star board. You will need and benefit from their objectivity. Number seven, confront failure head on. Admitting it isn't working is not defeat. I think it's smart, actually. It is the most healthy thing for you and the business. If directors can't put cards on the table honestly, your goose is cooked. Those are my words, not his. Number eight, be okay with director changeouts. Even if you don't have an official directorship, these are important conceptual considerations. Players change in winning teams, often for the better. As your baby business grows and evolves, the combination of leadership capability will also likely shift. The perfect combination is only relative to the moment in time. Number nine. He says, share your pain. Your family, friends, and advisors will be there for you in your hour of need. Trust their advice. They know you. Well, actually, I want to disagree on this one because I often think our friends and family have a picture of us that's not always what we're about. If they're not entrepreneurial, they will not understand why you don't just go out and get a job like everyone else. It's rare, I think, to find someone who truly understands your motivation to step into the unknown, which is exactly what starting a new business is all about. Number 10, if it's your turn to exit, be decisive. Drawing it out will only damage the business further. New doors will open and your experience will enable you to embrace a bright new future. Just get out and get on with it. That's tough, but I think it's good advice. Eamon concludes with the wise words of Craig Garner, who we'll be familiar with. He said, if you are not prepared to work long hours, suffer regular knockbacks, and have to deal with disappointment from others and your own personal expectations, then don't do it. If the answer is still yes, go forth and prosper, says Eamon. Well, thank you for putting your heart on the line in a way by sharing that, Eamon, and thank you for the insight that goes with all of that experience. I hope the stars are aligning for you in this next stage of business life. Our second question today is from Julian. It's another businessy one, actually, and it's around how to manage various situations at work. It has several parts that kind of flow on from each other, and they're short. These do not just apply to workplace situations, but also relationships of all kinds. So tune in even if you're not working at the moment. This first question is about listening actively, and it's something that's worth all of us thinking about. Here's my take on it. Expressing yourself clearly. Everything is about how the other person feels. This is really important. Let them speak. Nod whenever you can, and that puts you on their team. That makes them feel heard. Don't interrupt. It's very rude. If they're telling you what's wrong, ask them what they see as the ideal solution. You may already know, but once they articulate it, you will know what the next step should be. Whatever you say, consider it how it will make them feel. If people are backed into a corner, they'll always kick back. It's a self-defense mechanism, so don't put them in a corner. Give them the stage. Listen actively. The idea of giving someone the stage, I think, is really good. You don't need it. You have enough confidence and clarity not to take center stage, so allow them the time they need to tell you what they're feeling in that moment. The next one is to express yourself clearly. The more clearly and concisely you can articulate what you want to say, the more powerful your message is. This doesn't just apply to business. People say use the I statements. I feel upset by, rather than you have upset me. I don't know about that. I think go further than that. How about using neither of those and saying, well, that's upsetting. Let's do something about that. So keep them out of it, then they aren't tempted to get defensive, and keep you out of it by not using the I, think, I feel, whatever, because then it's not looking like it's all about you. Talk about the situation, the thing, the solution. Try that. It sets all the personal minutiae aside so the real issues can be addressed. The next part is about seeking solutions. I often say to people, if money wasn't an object, what would you do or choose? That really stops people in their tracks and makes them think. Because we quite often say, oh, there's no money, so I can't do it. Or there's no time, I can't do it. Try the same with seeking a solution. If there were no barriers to a perfect solution, barriers like time, resources, funding, whatever, what would the solution be? Or, here's another approach, if you could wave a magic wand and had a solution that satisfied both parties, what would that be? People often don't get to the solution because they are blocked by a perceived barrier. Make them envision the solution without any barriers and then work back from that. I think you'll find that can be really successful. The next one, we sort of touched on this in the beginning, is about staying calm. Because if you feel strongly about something or you think you've got the solution, you can get quite fired up about it and expressing that. But you absolutely must stay calm. When you lose your cool, you immediately weaken your position. Speak slowly and drop your voice slightly. If you slow down, it also gives you time to consider your responses so you don't say anything ill-considered. Whenever possible, nod in agreement to what they're saying. This will take the wind out of their sails and the fire out of their argument somewhat. There's no faster way to shut down an argument than to agree with someone. Do it whenever possible, as long as it doesn't undermine your point. For example, yes, I can see that's been upsetting for you. Do you see you are aligning yourself with them, but you're not doing anything other than saying you can understand their point of view? Or you can say, yes, I can see that wasn't what you expected. Once they simmer down, you can deal with the disagreement more easily. The next point is following up. I think follow-up is essential. Check in, say thank you for your time and input, tell them what you appreciate about their contribution, even if you didn't like it. Find something positive, and make them feel good about themselves. This works in personal disputes, actually, or personal differences. Tell them they have something good. They have great hair, whatever it is, anything to lower their guard and put them at ease. Then ask them if there's anything particularly good or bad that they can add now regarding how they think the conversation or meeting went. That opens the door for honest feedback and also for both of you to reiterate any decisions that were made. I consider follow-up to be something that you should always do and that should happen in writing. Words can get lost and misinterpreted, so always follow up the outcomes and decisions of a meeting in writing. This can be fun to do in a personal relationship too, as long as you keep it upbeat and maybe fun if you're able to swing that. Lastly, is to reflect privately. If you have an expectation of yourself to be the best person you can, this is important. Every day, take the opportunity to reflect. What did you do well? What could you do better or differently? What should be adjusted? What do you need to research or action or investigate? Fix anything you can fix and let go of anything you can't fix. That's big. That's an enormous step for a person to make in their personal development, I think. Address the things you are responsible for because you hold yourself accountable and your standards are high. You can't do better or more. The adage to listen more and speak less is a handy one. So many words float about and are superfluous or meaningless or worse, that undermine the situation or the people involved. If you speak only when you have something worthy to add, people will listen to you more. I have someone in my life who listens when I have something on my mind, and their only contribution when I finish speaking is when and if they have something they feel is a necessary and important consideration. I find that absolutely fabulous. I look forward to what they have to say because I know it'll be considered and meaningful. Work towards being the person people want to listen to because you have a valuable contribution. Note to self to aim for this too. Jefferson Fisher, I've mentioned him before, I follow him often, is full of wisdom about how we connect with each other, and he shares this with the world. He says the following about when you speak. He says, say it with control, say it with confidence, and say it in order to connect. That sort of covers the how and the why. I think it's great. Our next question today is from Andre. Interesting, this one. I met Andre at a front door where I was staying recently. He was delivering a package and he noticed that I was holding a baby, as one occasionally might be when opening the door. He then began a conversation about his own baby. He was mad about the baby, of course, but unable to get this baby to accept no as any kind of directive from him. I can't remember how old he said the baby was, but it was running away from him, so it was not too small to know what no was all about. Andre said he was tough and uncompromising as a person with everyone in his world except this baby. When he said no to it, it would laugh and ignore him, and the more he said no, the more it would do the thing that it wasn't supposed to do, and the louder it would laugh. He was asking for help as he really didn't know how to handle this child. This is not uncommon. Every parent is sort of clueless, you know, when we begin, and we learn along the way. Some instinctively seem to know how to manage a child, and some are just at sea. It's especially difficult for new parents who have no family around them to advise and support them, and Andre and his wife were alone in a new country. I did say to him that it's important when you say a definite no to a child that they pay attention if, for example, you can see they're in danger. I also talked about how the one-year-old I had in my charge would pay attention to me when I wouldn't allow her to pull my glasses off. She controls herself. She wants to do it, but she stops herself, because she knows I'm definite about it. I never let her do it. I have seen tough people be absolute pushovers with their own children, and I really don't know how to tell which parents are going to be like that and which parents are going to be more uncompromising. I'm still figuring that one out. But I have to say, as parents, you must try and give it your all, because if you don't, you end up with a child who rules the household, and they just don't know enough to do a good job of that, and who people really don't like to have around because they're so badly behaved. I'm sure it also makes it tough for the child in dealing with others in the world if they haven't learned any restraint and some self-control or management. Now, I know they're tiny, so I don't really have unrealistic expectations. It's just about training and expectation and reiterating and boundaries. You love a child no less if you guide it and give it boundaries. They need to have them. They need to be taught to control themselves and not let rip because they don't like something. There will be plenty of things in life not to like, and you cannot be responding with a tantrum every time. Much as we might like to do that even as adults, you just can't do it. My philosophy is not to say no to a child unless you mean it. And then you need to be consistent. So your no will be something you can follow through with, and the child knows it's absolute. You undermine your authority if you back down. So don't say no, say maybe, or I'm thinking about it, or I'll get back to you, whatever. But give yourself time to respond if you need to consider something. But when you say no, mean no. You're the adult and the parent, and you have that prerogative to defer if you want to, if you're not ready to actually say no. Never back down. Never allow whining, wheedling, wailing, or other wicked behavior to have any impact on your no. Get in quickly and say, no means no, so don't ask that again. You may explain further if you wish, but I know from experience that if you feel you always have to explain yourself, you'll end up in an exhausted heap by the end of the day. No, darling, you may not have another lolly, but you may have an apple. Or, no, darling, remember, no snacking after 5 o'clock, because we'll be having dinner shortly. That was a rule in my house. I do think offering one of two choices when you're okay with both choices is a clever way to give them some sense of their own choice making, and for you not to feel like you're quashing their little spirits. Have house rules. Stick to them like super glue. Your children will know where they stand then. Your life will be easier once you get over the first hump of establishing this, and order and harmony will be within your reach. Babies and children don't know what you know. You're calling the shots, not them. You make the rules because you have the life experience and you want to help that child of yours to do well in life. Being a brat is not doing well. They can choose to be a brat when they grow up if they think that's going to serve them. You love them big time, but when you say no, that's what it means. Tell them when they leave school, they can make their own choices. That's what I did with my children. Andre did look a bit weak when he left, but it seemed that his wife was doing some research and was beginning to get the idea that nipping the behavior in the bud early makes it so much easier. If you're the more definite one in your household, don't allow your other person to undermine your good work by giving in whenever demands are made by the little things. You are helping your child to grow up to be a great human being who respects boundaries and knows how to manage their state. Well done. Since we talked once before about how to remember names, this is our fourth question. I keep hearing more interesting suggestions, so I wanted to bring some to your attention today because, frankly, I forget to tell myself that I will give myself $1 million if I remember the names of the people I'm about to meet. This one is a fun idea, though. When you meet someone, you must assign them a superpower. Perhaps that rhymes with their name or the way they look or speak. Bob can leap tall buildings in a single bound. Julie has multicoloured wings under her jacket. Jack can shrink people with a withering look. Just kidding there. But actually, if you didn't warm to the person on first meeting, you could give them a kind of questionable superpower. Try that and see if you have success. Also, if you've bombed out, you could ask them when you leave what their name is and say, "Can you remind me because I don't want to forget?" They'll be charmed and flattered by this, and you'll feel the glow of that and not feel like you've failed with the name remembering thing. One other thing to do is to repeat the person's name when they're introduced. I may have told you this. In fact, I've heard of a woman, it was in a movie actually, where she dropped her voice until it was as deep as a man when she said the name when she was introduced. Everyone looked incredibly startled, but no one forgot the name. I guess a man could do that in reverse by speaking in a very high-pitched voice. It'd be quite fun, actually, and a good icebreaker, I think. Well, those are our questions for today. Once again, I seem to have out-talked myself. So I'm going to go to the end of our show, which is always something from the Word, a message from the universe. I hope there was something in our show that was of interest for anyone listening and that this message will speak to somebody out there because I'm sure it will. Here we go. Every day is a new day and I can give you a new message, but what I say will never change. I will tell you who you really are. And I will say to you, walk in that knowledge. Do not be less than you are created to be. Do not ask for or expect less. Ask for and expect more. That is what you are designed for. That is what you are here for. I love that. Thank you so much for joining me. See you next time. This is Ask Mana. I'm Margot de Coatsworth.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.